This is Long Story Short from the Connecticut Mirror and WSHU Public Radio. I'm Ebong Udama. Connecticut Governor Ned Lamont's fiscal success rests on a foundation laid by his predecessors and others.
It was both parties making a decision to put in a much more stringent spending cap than we have right now.
That's Keith Faniff, the Connecticut Mirror's state budget reporter. He's dug into his archives to revisit how tax hikes and policy reforms of the 2010s ensured that when Lamont took office in 2019, big dollars would be saved and available for him to pay down debt. More to come after this.
Hi, I'm Bruce Putterman, publisher of the Connecticut Mirror. Here at the Connecticut Mirror, we do more than just cover the news. As a statewide news organization, we connect people. We introduce people from Wilton to people in Willimantic. We show New London residents what they have in common with New Milford residents. We connect folks in North Brantford with folks in North Canaan. If you believe in the importance of connecting people throughout the state, please make a donation to CT Mirror today. Thank you.
Hello, Keith. You say covering state finances during former Governor Daniel Malloy's first term in 2011 was like trying to interview Smokey the Bear while California redwoods were going up in a blaze. It's hard to remember that Connecticut's finances were that bad.
They were. That's the short answer. They really were. Governor Malloy and the legislature that served, particularly during his first term, seemed to have a forest fire to put out, a fiscal forest fire, say that three times fast, to put out every time you blinked. We had the largest deficit in modern history. I mean, almost one out of every $5 in the state budget effectively was missing. They had inherited no rainy day fund and $1 billion in operating debt from pay off from the last administration. So it was just very different.
So basically, there were two things going on here. First, there were tax hikes that Malloy passed, and then the fiscal guardrails that were created by the legislature in a bipartisan way in 2017. Could you just tell us about those two things that made a difference in our finances?
Sure. Quickly, though, on the tax hikes, I'd elaborate a little on that. It was a progressive tax hike in the sense that the wealthy were asked to pay more, but the middle class was taxed as well. But absolutely, the emphasis was placed in a way it really had not been before to that extent on higher earning households. But there also was a pretty significant labor concessions package that was put in. And municipal aid was not cut, but quite a few programs also, the governor had tightened the belts on. So they there was a reason they called that shared sacrifice. That was in 2011. And then you had another major tax hike, including the income tax, in 2015. In 2017, that was the legislature that served with Governor Malloy, not only taking the lead, but basically doing it without him. They weren't able to reach an agreement amongst themselves at first or with the governor. And they actually froze the governor out of and his administration out of the budget negotiations. And it was both parties making a decision to put in a much more stringent spending cap than we have right now, but also to create this very controversial new savings program that takes a portion, not all, but a portion of our income tax receipts and a portion of business tax receipts, actually pulls them outside of the budget. Now, we're actually siphoning money away from municipal aid, healthcare, education. Again, it's not money lying around unused. And we're generating surpluses of close to 9% every single year, putting that money in the pensions. The 2017 legislature never realized that these caps were going to generate anywhere near close to that. Last point, in the two decades prior to the enactment of these caps in 2017, the average budget closed with a 0.1% surplus.
Wow.
Since then, It's been about 8.8. In other words, 88 times as a percentage, because I want to equalize this for inflation. These are much larger surpluses we're forcing. And that is why some of Governor Lamont's more progressive colleagues in the General Assembly are saying, we are trying, our pension debt was amassed over 70 years, three generations. We've got a system where one generation is being forced to solve a pension crisis created by three. And if we try to solve it too quickly, you know, over 20, 25 years, our programs will suffer.
But Lamont, as he touts his fiscal management, he's being criticized by Republicans for loosening some of the guardrails. Is that actually what's going on here? What's actually happening as far as our finances are concerned? Is Lamont right that his fiscal management has held the line?
There absolutely is some truth to it. There's a little more perspective to it, though. 2 years ago, and I am going to pat myself on the back here. I ran a large series looking at the guardrails, simply saying mathematically, nobody has ever saved like this, and it's not sustainable. The only reason the guardrails mathematically did not collapse earlier is because the pandemic had resulted between a program known by the acronym ARPA and a coronavirus relief fund money. We're talking between the two about $4.1 billion of flexible federal grant money that we could spend outside the budget on anything was available. Think of it like fiscal Novocaine. Even as the guardrails were extracting state dollars each year from the budget, saying you can't spend them, we'd have this federal pandemic money that you could spend in its place.
And in the meantime, Governor Ned Lamont touts his fiscal management as one of his greatest achievements as he runs for a third term in office.
Well, Governor Lamont deserves credit in particular for not spending the money. And people might say, well, how hard is that? To which I would respond, it is unbelievably hard. Unfortunately, I can still remember legislatures in the late 90s, in the early and mid 2000s that ran up big surpluses, and 2/3 of all that money got spent. Governor Lamont absolutely has made it much more difficult for legislators to spend money on other programs and has forced them to prioritize paying down pension debt. The question, again, that his critics are saying is, has it been at the expense of other programs that we value, such as municipal aid, healthcare, education? It's a debate about finding the balance.
And we'll know which way the voters will go in just a few days in the Democratic primary.
That's a fair point. I think you're going to see whoever emerges from that primary, though, continue to have to discuss the guardrails with Senator Fazio for the rest of the campaign.
Wow. Well, thanks a lot for going into the archives and reminding us of how we got to where we are today. Thanks so much, Keith.
Thanks.
Long Story Short is hosted by me, Ebong Udana, and produced by Molly Ingram. Harriet Jones is our editor. WSHU's Alicia Daddario and the Connecticut Mirror's Gabby DeBenedictis are our digital team. This podcast is a collaboration between the Connecticut Mirror and WSHU Public Radio. We go behind the scenes at the home of public policy journalism in Connecticut. More can be found online at ctmirror.org and wshu.org. Our episodes can be found wherever you get your podcast.